Welcome back to Geeking Out Over Star Wars. It's been a long time, but it's always a long time because that's just apparently how the release schedule goes with us. But we're back. We're talking about Star Wars. We're talking about The Acolyte. I'm incredibly excited. But before we jump into any of that, of course, I'm going to introduce my co-pilot, as always, Shamari. Hello, my friend.
Hello, Zach. Glad to be back doing the show. How have you been? How's everything going?
Listen, I can't complain. Star Wars is always part of my life. So yeah, I've continuously, even though we're not talking about it on the weekly basis like we want to, that's obviously still a very much a part of my everyday life, in one way or another. Whether that be the comics or the novels or Star Wars, the some shows that we've gotten. But for the most part, yeah, I'm good. Life has been good. Good rhythm here in the new country. Been almost a year now. I think 11 months now. Next month will have been one official year since I've moved to Bristol in the UK, which is actually wild to think about. It's actually really wild to think about.
Yeah, it's crazy. Definitely a big change. But glad things are going well. And it's funny too, you're in the other kind of nation where there's a lot of Star Wars, a lot of kind of Star Wars representation. Because of course you have the British actors and the American actors as well. So
I think that's I'm meant to be, man. I'm where I'm meant to be. Star Wars at all times, surrounded by all times. That's right. How have you been? You're getting ready to move soon, right? You mentioned?
Yes, I did. Yeah. So I'm getting ready to move as well. So a move a little bit closer to Philly. So shout out to any of our fans that are in the Philadelphia area. I will be in that same general area. So but a lot of life changes.
This is like adulthood. Stuff keeps changing, we gotta keep moving, and things just keep happening. I've also recognized that I spent quite a lot of money, and so the other day I was sitting down in the car. So adulthood full of changes, filled with Star Wars still. I'm still a giant child and nerd, but also just it's just a never ending like list of expenses and grocery shopping and cleaning. Well, I can't, man. It's just getting to me. I'm like, what the heck? I just want to sit back. I want to have to not deal with anything. And I just want to watch some Star Wars on repeat for all times. But I can't do that. It's the worst. But getting off track, obviously very much on a tangent. We are here for one reason and one reason only. And that is The Acolytes, which just premiered a few days ago on Wednesday. I was so excited. Got a coworker at work who's a massive Star Wars fan, trying to get him into all the books and novels and comics and whatnot. That's been a little bit of a slow journey. But we had to make a thing of it. We went out, we got food, we sat down, we watched premiere back to back. I can't believe it's here. So we are going to talk about all things The Acolyte. We'll talk about theories, we'll talk about our first impressions, we'll talk about obviously comparisons, we'll talk about acting, we'll talk about the story, where we think it's going, just our general time with it. And really, we will be spoiling things. We hadn't talked about this beforehand, but I feel like we're on the same page, right? Because like I really want to dive into it here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So this is your warning. This is everyone who's listening, this is your spoiler alert. If you have not watched The Acolyte yet, please go and do so, because I promise you won't be disappointed. Also, regardless of what the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is, I have not come across one person who isn't super excited about the show. So I promise you, you will find something to like here. It's worth it. Go watch it, and then come back here and listen to us break it down and geek out with us. Because that's what we do. We geek out over Star Wars. All right. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the episode, where were you at in the lead-up? How excited were you for The Acolyte?
Boy. I was...
Be brutally honest.
So going into it... So going into it before, and boy, I actually don't know if I should even say this because I don't know if you saw this.
Oh,
have you seen the, like, the TV spots and stuff? Have you been paying attention to that?
I've not really watched too many TV spots. I think the most I saw was the couple trailers that maybe were released online, like the teaser and then maybe a main trailer a month or so ago. And then, of course, there was the there was that little sneak peek at what ends up being the first scene in the show at the end of the 25th anniversary screenings of The Phantom Menace.
Right.
Okay. So that was it. And I kind of was purposefully not paying attention to too many TV spots. Not because I was too concerned about spoilers or ruining the mystery or whatnot. I think I maybe was just a little bit turned off from it because I saw what I needed to after the Phantom Menace trailer, after the Phantom Menace screening. The trailer was phenomenal. It sold me. Seeing that on the big screen, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait. I was already in the mindset, so I kind of really wasn't thinking too hard about it.
Okay. All right. So I probably won't mention this one detail then that I noticed in one of the TV spots. And
oh God. Well, wait, are we talking about a spoiler detail? Like you think it maybe spells something too far along?
I'd say it's a spoiler detail, or it's something that if you see it, not having known that you would see it, it will probably be a better experience.
I'm on the fence of whether or not to make you spill it. Or if to make you spill it after the show.
It's something you probably could have guessed that you'd see, but it was like just confirmed in a TV spot.
Well, you know what? How about we're going to not do it during the show for anybody who's listening, for anybody who is trying to keep like away from that. But I am going to grill you after we're done recording this.
Okay.
So we'll leave it for that. Go ahead.
So before seeing that TV spot, I'd say I was excited. But I'd say I was cautiously excited as well. And I think the main reasons for that are so I'd say it's a couple things. One, I think the last, well, Ahsoka was fantastic, but some of the I think some of the things that we had gotten, well, particularly obviously the movies, and I was a bit disappointed by the later ones. And then I think the last season of The Mandalorian, I wouldn't say was bad, but I'd say it wasn't as good as maybe.
The more I think about that last season, I'm really disappointed by it, but continue.
Yeah. So, and then there was also the Book of Boba Fett, which also wasn't bad, but wasn't as good as I had hoped it would be. So I was cautious. I was certainly cautious, going into this. And this was like a long time ago, probably like maybe a few years ago, even it was a while ago, but I remember I had talked about on my show, Leslie Headland, the showrunner, mentioning that she didn't want to bring on people that were Star Wars fans to work on this. And I was like, well, that's kind of odd, you know, and I'm just like, but so I was that kind of threw me off where I was just like, oh, OK, so is this going to feel like Star Wars if you were just bringing in people that don't like know or care about Star Wars? So I was just kind of like, OK, I mean, I'm hoping everything that I saw leading up to this looked good. But I was like, OK, I mean, I know there's a chance that this may not be exactly what I am hoping that it will be. And then also, of course, like these are all like new characters, basically, and there's no confirmation of any of the other High Republic people that we are familiar with, besides Vernest Rowe, being in this show. So yeah, all that kind of combined, I was excited, but still having that hesitation of, I hope this is good, but it still might let me down.
One of the things that I was also a little bit wary of, and I think I was with you on the idea of that, I'm a little worried when I don't want only giant fans of something to make, right, you know, stories and that something. Like, because I think it's important to have outside voices. But at the same time, I also don't want people to just churn out something and not have any respect for the fans and for the story and for the lore. What I found myself, obviously I go through in and out phases. As much as I do love Star Wars, there are just some weeks where it's like I got a lot of other stuff to do and there's a lot of other competing attention. You know, we had X-Men 97 recently. We've had a bunch of different things that compete for my nerd brain. It wasn't off my radar at all. It was new June 4th was coming around. But it was a little bit of and where are we with it? How's it going to look? You are right in that I think the output of the series is, of all the series since Disney took over, has been up and down a bit. I think the first two seasons of The Mandalorian, spectacular. Second season, not so much. Book of Boba Fett, couple good episodes, but again, not great. I think Ahsoka is really good. And I think it really does stick the landing as well. There are still some aspects I don't like. What I ended up becoming okay with was recently with Leslie, and we'll get into the show and I'll talk more about this, but recently Leslie Headland had talked about, so she's a massive Star Wars fan. She's a High Republic fan. She is such a massive fan of the universe that what she wanted to do was she wanted to make sure that she brought people on who also weren't massive fans so that they could have a very objective eye at the storytelling and the structure to make sure that it makes sense and that it's not just a fan gone wild trying to cram in as many cool things as she can. Like, she is a seasoned creator. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Russian Doll. Love Russian Doll. Absolutely love Russian Doll. And she created that series. And the actor who plays Yord is also from that series as well. I ended up becoming okay with the idea that we can have both voices in the writer's room, both voices in the creators, to be able to balance out the project. You know, we get something that is true to the source material, true to Star Wars, that feels like Star Wars, but also is objectively a good show and not just something. Because while as much as I enjoyed Ahsoka, I still think Dave Filoni has some growing to do in terms of pacing, right? Writing out stories for live-action audiences and all of that, and making it into not just a show that Star Wars fans can like, but that is just a well-built show. There are still some things I think he has to work on. And I think we also saw that with the third season of The Mandalorian, even though Jon Favreau was also working on that. So I think I really appreciated that we were getting creators and Star Wars fans together. And I think that really shines through in this episode. So let's just get right into it. Before we even get into the nitty-gritty, now that you've seen the first couple episodes, how, in comparison to where you were at in your anticipation, how are you feeling now?
Oh, much better. It's the quality. The quality is, I would say, has. I would say it has probably exceeded my expectations. It's been very good. The cast, the story so far has been very compelling. There are parts where I was like, boy, I hope they don't go down this road. And then they didn't. And they did a twist. And I was like, oh, okay. So it has been really good. And all the fight choreography has been fantastic as well. It's been good. I think this is very, very high quality, television or streaming show. This has been very, very high quality stuff so far. I'm definitely optimistic going forward. There are some things I still am hoping we get answers to, and that these answers are, satisfying, I guess. We'll probably get into that. But so far it's been very good. So I'm very happy with what we're getting.
Yeah, I'm very much in the same boat. I don't want to say blown away, but incredibly excited and optimistic by these first two episodes. Because there's a part of me that also feels like whenever I'm watching Star Wars, I have to... I had this when I first watched The Force Awakens. And that was when The Force Awakens, and I'm sitting there in that theater in December of 2015, and The Force Awakens starts up. J.J. Abrams has a very distinct style that's very different from George Lucas and the rest of Star Wars. And it was one of the things where I kind of had to readjust the way it looked and the way it sounded and the way it played out to kind of and reconcile with how I saw Star Wars in my head and how it's built up. And I think that has happened with a lot of these series. And it's a very personal thing. I know not everybody's like this, but sometimes I kind of need to watch something more than once to kind of like, okay, so this is new Star Wars. It's going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's going to be different, but that doesn't make it bad or good. It just makes it different. And I want to sit with that and watch for the first time, get that out of the way, all that feeling of like, ah, and then the second time I can really settle into the story, really get into it. I'll tell you, especially after watching it the second time, this is the most I feel... The series that has felt the most like a Star Wars prequel, like episodes 1, 2, and 3, from the pacing to the editing and the movement and the action, it's felt the most like the prequels in a such a great, but even better. I mean, like, better writing, obviously, even better choreography. Like, it is 20 something years later, but I feel so much like this feels like Star Wars. This really feels like Star Wars, and this is set 100 years earlier. And, like, also, let's say this. I'm so happy we're getting something new in Star Wars that does not have to deal with the Empire or the Skywalkers or any of that. I can't, it's hard to even explain how excited that makes me. Because as much as I love Star Wars and all those other stories, it has forever felt like, Disney and Lucasfilm were playing very close to the vest, and that they were worried about trying something different, and wondering how it would go over with everyone. And from the look of it, it seems to be going over really well. The viewership was the highest rated for any series on Disney Plus so far this year. Fantastic. Let's get into the episodes. And I think the very first scene is very telling for how the entire series is going to go. And so we are meeting the acolyte, and she is on Weda, and this is the start of her mission, though we don't know this, at the time, of course, but she goes in, and that's where we come across Carrie and Moss's, Master Indara, and absolute total, like, just cool head. Like, she's just... she's so cool. Carrie Ann Moss, Trinity from The Matrix, just absolute oozes. Is oozing with cool. Just oozing with it. The Acolyte, they have a fight, and very early on, we get the sense of stakes about this show, because we, like I said, full spoilers, so if you're listening, please, 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 we're about to say, but Master Indara dies in the first scene. Like, that's it. The first scene, and you're like, oh snap, okay, they're not playing at all. Like, the fact that you took what people were probably excited for, one of the most exciting characters, and because of the actor, and they said, no, we need to understand what the stakes are here. And after an incredibly choreographed fight scene, which we'll get into also, because I kind of want to jump into that aspect of this too. The fact that Indara goes down in this first fight scene is an establishment of the stakes, and it really drives home what could have happened that this is the consequence. What did you think about the first fight scene?
Oh, it was great. It was so good. And you were right, Carrie Ann Moss. You played the character so well.
God, she's so cool. And, it's just so cool.
It's so good. And it's, again, as someone that where the Force and the Jedi, and that's my favorite part of Star Wars, it fit like a glove. It fit like a glove. There was not one thing. I saw that and I was like, that is a Jedi. That is a Jedi master. And it was done so well. so well.
I think that it's just it's from the outset, the music was already on point. The fact that we're getting Jedi, Carrie Ann Moss, Master Indara felt so much like Jedi. It was really cool seeing her at like this noodle house just hanging with buddies, which was also kind of cool. Like, she's very stoic, obviously. But I love that throughout that fight scene, we kind of see her steely exterior go down, especially once she recognizes who it is, when she unmasks the phase, you know, the acolyte, and we find out that it's May. I mean, of course, we don't know it's May then, but we find out that it's May, and that they are linked. And she obviously, the walls crumble a little bit. And she, her guard is down a little bit, and she dies. And that's it. And you're like, what? And I know there has been some like, oh my God, how could Carrie Ann Moss, somebody they're so excited for, someone who, you know, we're hoping is going to be a main character this entire series, ends up just dying the first episode. How did you feel about that?
Oh man, I didn't mind it at all. So I'll say that with a grain of salt. If I'm of the impression that we will probably see more from her at some point through like flashbacks or something.
Flashbacks, yeah.
So I don't think this is the last that we've seen of her on the show. If it is, and by the end it's like that was literally her only scene, then I'd be like, I still think it served a, you know, I think it did a good, the scene was great, it served its purpose well. But then I'd probably be like, yeah, they were definitely milking it in the marketing, probably. Mm. That, you know, Carrie Ann Moss is Carrie Ann Moss, and it's probably going to draw more eyeballs. So I guess if you're like a Carrie Ann Moss fan, which they're definitely out there, and you're watching this show hoping to get a lot of her, and you just got that, I could see that being a disappointment or something where someone's like, okay, why would they do that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So I would understand that. And I'd be, I guess, a little disappointed too, because she was so great. But I think the scene was very well done. It was very well done. It definitely set the tone for the rest of what we saw through the first couple episodes. So I personally didn't mind it, but I mean, I understand it. I kind of figured that when it happened, I'm like, okay, some people aren't going to be happy about this. I just knew. I'm like, some people are just going to be very unhappy about this. Carrie Ann Moss is a very talented. Very talented actor. She's been doing this for a long time. She's very popular, and you know, but I didn't mind it personally.
I mean, I also appreciate that it's not just a situation where they're going, oh my God, the public's perception of Indara's importance is because of the actor, but that doesn't necessarily mean the actor has to play the importance of the actual character. It's, you know, we've built up this, or fans of Carrie Ann Moss have built up this, like, oh my God, she's going to, and we hope that she's going to be in it for so long. But she has been in this industry for a long time. She's just an actor playing a really good character, doing it incredibly well. And it serves its purpose, right? Like, it's a strong character that you latch onto at the very beginning, and who has that gravitas that is also important for selling the scene. The way she carries herself, the establishment of the fight scenes is through her. The way the Jedi fight, the way that they don't open their weapon, right, at first, but if they're not presented with weapons, so they don't open, she didn't open her lightsaber at first. The way she's, the combat, this force foo, quote-unquote, that Leslie Headland's been calling it, I think that's all established, and having that actor, someone who can bring that gravitas, it's important. But it's all about serving the story, as opposed to just serving, you know, popularity. And so I was more than okay with, and I don't have a big, strong attachment to Carrie Ann Moss or the trendy character in Matrix as much as I do enjoy it. So yeah, fantastic opening scene. From there, we kind of, you know, swipe in nice Star Wars style to the same character who we think is the Acolyte, and it's her name is Osha, and she is a mechnek working on a Trade Federation ship, which is always very cool to see. You know, obviously early Trade Federation days, we not where they're at in terms of, you know, under the rule of Palpatine, under the, you know, the sway of Palpatine in Phantom Menace, but is doing what they need to do. She's hired as a mechnik. She does repairs on the outside of ships, which apparently the Republic has made it so that only astromechs are allowed to do that. But, you know, Trade Federation be doing things that they shouldn't be doing still.
Right.
So Osha is her name, former Jedi, who has actually been, who left the Order and has been working as a mechnik. She is found, though. The Jedi find her. They know what happens to Endara. They find her because someone from the noodle shop had placed her there. So they go to pick her up off the Trade Federation ship. I don't know if there's too much to say about this scene. We saw a Jedi Vector, which I thought was really cool. Real quick, that's what they arrive on as they're getting to the Trade Federation ship. So I thought that was really cool. Good little nod for High Republic fans. If, especially if you've read the comics, you kind of know you've seen it in art. So that was really neat to see on screen. You have anything about this scene? It establishes the character. We see some of the interactions between her and Ford and Yord Phandar, not Ford, the car, Yord Phandar. We see some interactions before he takes her into custody and has her put on a prison frigate to be transferred to Coruscant. Anything from this scene for you?
Cool seeing Nymoidians again.
Yeah, I always appreciate that. They looks really good too. Yes, the prosthetics looked really good. Was it prosthetics? Was it CG? Was it a mix? I don't know, but I thought it looked better than it actually has in a long time.
Yeah, they looked fantastic. Yeah, that worked really well. I loved, as you said, them flying in on one of the
vectors. Yeah, the Jedi vectors.
Yeah, that was a very, very cool touch. I like the characters. I immediately liked the characters. They felt like characters that would come out of one of the High Republic novels.
It does. Yeah, they do.
And Jeki. Goodness.
Yeah. So first off, when Yord comes on to the Trade Federation, the Trade Federation is called the Fallon Freighter. Oh, okay. That's my cat. Hi. Can you move? I'm recording. This is inconvenient. You're on the laptop. Move. I love my cat, but she just, everything is her playground, everywhere and anything. On the Fallon Freighter, we meet, I think that's the first Zygarian Jedi we meet, Yord's apprentice, I think, maybe princess, which was cool to see. But yeah, they pick up Osha. Osha was dropped, like, someone was like, oh, that was her in the noodle shop, that is the one who killed the Jedi, she did it, she ruined my noodle shop. She's taken into custody, she is kind of transferred, and... There's mutiny in the prison transfer. A couple other prisoners make an escape. All the escape pods are ejected, but without Osha, Osha straps herself down, and she crash lands on a planet called Karlak. This is reported to the Jedi, and they send out a small team, which consists of a few characters, which we'll get into. But let's talk about our first introduction of Coruscant, and that I'm just in awe to see Coruscant on screen again, man. It makes me so happy. Did you notice it seemed like less buildings?
I did. I was going to ask you the exact same thing. so yeah, I did notice that. Very interesting touch.
I mean, it makes sense. You know, it's 100 years before Phantom Menace. And in 100 years, if you look at, I know we think the galaxy's been around for so long, Coruscant's been around for thousands, thousands, thousands of years. But, right, like, it's, technology moves fast in 100 years. A lot gets built in 100 years. Look at New York City 100 years ago. Look at New York City now. Right? Yep. Like, a lot gets built. So I think there was a purposeful, depiction there that there's just less buildings. less high-rise structures, and obviously that changes come Phantom Menace. But I thought that was really cool. It was a good little nugget for them to include, I thought.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was. I thought that was a nice touch. I did enjoy seeing Coruscant, seeing it kind of in a just kind of a less hectic place. So it's interesting. And again, it just got me more into the world building of, boy, I would love to know, just of course geeking out over Star Wars, I would love to know why did it grow so much in the span of, in the time frame that we saw? Was there more expansion? Is Coruscant specifically, like, is there just more wealth, more centralization of the galaxy's resources there? Like, I'm just so curious.
I tend to agree. And so this is a very small, it's a very political, geeky, very geeky thing for us to be going into. But I would think that it's very much like, you look at any government, that's where the power is and that's where the money is.
Right.
And thus, so all these resources, well, yes, we should be focusing on the Republic covers a lot of planets and territory. It should be, wealth should be evenly spread to developing these other countries and planet, these other countries, these other planets and systems. But where's the money really going to go? It's going to go to the Senate. It's going to go to the politicians. It's going to go to Coruscant and developing this area where the government has been for, what, thousands of years? So it makes sense that anytime there's any kind of... I think also is that we don't know how the High Republic, as it is in the novels and comics right now, that three-phase storyline, we don't know where that ends, right? Where the Republic stands in terms of the Outer Rim and in terms of spreading out and outreach into the galaxy, right? We know that after the Nihil kind of section everything off, right now what's going on there is the occlusion zone, so they barely even get to the Outer Rim. But after Lena So tried to do her great works and expand the Republic into those systems, and we don't know how it ends with the Nihil, but I can imagine that even if, obviously, they will defeat and vanquish the Nihil, and it's not about will they, it's about how will they and the whys of thing, which I think is also the what's important to consider with the mystery here of the Acolyte. But I think that maybe a lot less money went into outreach after the Nihil, a lot less, the Outer Rim maybe became a territory that the Republic realized that they weren't going to be able to outreach as much as they wanted, and naturally it became about the core worlds and the core systems, and of course, like I said, government, that's where the money is, so that's what they're going to focus on. That's just my take, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I feel the same way. I think that, just like you were saying, just that that reduced focus on expansion and more just on the NRM and just developing the core worlds. I would think that would be the reason for that. And maybe, you know, the seeds are already kind of being planted for that in what we're reading through the High Republic novels. But that's where I'm thinking that comes from as well.
We also, in this... this little trip to Coruscant, we get our first look at the Jedi Temple, and inside we're introduced to Master Sol, played by Lee Jong-jae, who is, I would say, one of my already favorite characters in Star Wars. Master Sol is precious and protect him at all costs, and also he would be best friends with Qui-Gon Jinn. Firmly believe that. But we are introduced to him teaching a class of younglings about the Force. I would like to say that I hope I'm not the only one thinking that hopefully he follows up with that one kid who saw all-consuming fire. that strikes me as like a little bit of a red flag, you know? But But that's a little small thing. But also we are introduced to Vernestra, you know, a couple hundred years old at this point now. Yeah, we're introduced to Vernestra, who strides in very regal, obviously well beyond probably Grandmaster at this point. Has been around for a long time, and I would say has seen some things. So curious. So I think one of the things that some people could talk about with this, she's very. It seems to be that the Jedi in the years following the Nile conflict have become even more regimented. You start to see that there's definitely that shift from where they were, a lot more open attachments and everything in the High Republic. And it was just that it started to become less. It's become more about bureaucracy. It's become about talking and committees and deciding things more than the action and doing what's right sometimes, it seems. And so we kind of can get that. You get that regal sense from Vernestra, someone who seems a little bit detached and is about order. But I think that's because she's been around. And however the Nile conflict ends, she survived that. She's seen stuff since then, in the 150 years since then, she's seen stuff. So I'm curious, and I don't think it's like some people. I feel like it could be very easy to be like, oh, she seems so out of character. I think it's more reasonable to think, oh, she's 170 years old, and she's seen some stuff. And also, how do the Jedi get to this point? How did you feel about seeing Vernestra on screen for the first time? Introduction to Master Soul, the look of everything in the temple. Talk to me. Geek out with me.
Oh, I loved it. So everything in the Jedi Temple, first of all, just the Jedi Temple in general, just being in the Jedi Temple, and it's not like a flashback or something like that. Like it's actually like in the show, like we're in the Jedi Temple in the show,
which a real Jedi. Set. It's there.
They're there, and it's like in real time with like real Jedi and Padawans. It's not some artifact. It's not some like, oh, this old thing with those old kooky monks. Like, no, it's actual. The Jedi are there, and they're quote unquote in their peak. And you know, like this is what it is. Even just that in general, I just love. But I also love Master Soul. Well, I'm sure we'll get more into him later on as well, but I love him as well. You know, him teaching the younglings, which that's a, you know, kind of a classic thing that Jedi Masters, I guess, you know, do that they should be doing. And it was just, I don't know. It was all just really good. And I wasn't disappointed at all with what we saw from Vernestra Rowe either. I mean, was she different? Yeah, but she's much older. you know, so I'm just like, I feel like that just comes with age and experience and wisdom. And, you know, I feel like they could have done the easy thing of, oh, she's exactly how she was, but just maybe a little older. It's like, no, she's actually much older. And she, like you said, she's seen a lot of things and been through a lot of things. So she's much... She has, you know, I guess has changed and grown up, you know, and I feel like it's easy to forget that she is still like a teenager or like a very, very young. She's still very young in the where we are in the novels right now.
Yeah, she's 16, 17.
Yeah. So
she's very, very young. I mean, there's obviously such a big, it's 150 years after what we're reading now in the High Republic. So. Right. A ton of stuff has happened, and yeah, she's so much older, and that's just what happens. Go ahead. Yes.
And I don't know if I'm bringing this up too early or not, but it is something that I am wondering if we'll see and hoping we'll see.
Go ahead. Throw a wrench into all my talking. Do it.
And if you were spoiled on this, I'm wondering if I don't even... Maybe I shouldn't even want to know if you know about this, but I'm hoping we see Yoda. I feel like that would just be the crescendo cherry on top with sprinkles on top. That would just make everything just so much better. I'm just like, oh my God. Like imagine if we saw Yoda, similar to how we saw like Luke or like Vader. Like Luke in The Mandalorian or like Vader in Rogue One or something. If we got like a Yoda cameo in this, that would be incredible.
I think it is. I think it's possible. I actually think it's probably incredibly likely. I think it's more than possible. I think it's very. I think it's probable. I think the show, from what I'm, the sense I'm getting so far is they're not really. I don't want to say relying on fan service. Obviously, everything, you know, can be in service to fans. Yes and no. But I do think they are telling the story that they want to tell, involving the characters they want to involve, and they're not going to just throw Yoda in for no reason, because they know that that becomes the big thing, right? It kind of, you throw Yoda in, you throw these well-known characters we know in, it will become a talking point. I think there's so much other things that they want to, the Wookiee Jedi of Kil Naka, I think, is already making waves. Master Soul's making waves. I think all these characters are already loved, and I think that to introduce Yoda at least early on would take away from that. But that being said, Yoda's like 800 at this point and very much around. So I think one of the things that I do think Yoda would at this point is like Grandmaster, right? So even probably even less active than he was in the High Republic novels and the comics where we're at. And I think there's that. And then too, I think Star Wars also tries to walk this fine line in how much they involve Yoda, because Yoda's part of probably the only link of a character that's alive in the prequels and in the rest of the Skywalker saga. So it's almost like we can't have a character that knows too much or has seen everything. Why are we not talking about it in the prequels then? Why is it never mentioned? I think it's one of those things that they shouldn't have to really explain themselves. Can, when somebody's lived for 900 years, stuff has happened, even if they don't talk about it. But that is something that a lot of people, it's like when it's very simple. Okay. So I'm kind of going on a tangent here. I'm word vomiting, but very much how people are telling us that Obi-Wan and Anakin seeing each other, Obi-Wan and Vader fighting in the Obi-Wan series, completely breaks canon because, you know, because of what Vader said in A New Hope, when he was like, last time I saw you, I was but the apprentice, and now I am the master. And, you know, the world goes on about how much Disney destroyed Star Wars and ruined canon by making them fight in the Obi-Wan series. And the load of malarkey that is, we don't have to go into. But I do think that there is a bit of that, like, okay, we don't want to say too much or show that Yoda knows so much, to the point that it's like, oh, why, you know, he talked about peace and prosperity for 1,000 generations. Why is blah, blah, blah. So I think to sum it up, I think that they kind of want to reserve him. I do think we're going to probably, what's going to end up happening is just, I think the it'll be a cameo, it'll be a council scene. At some point, they'll have to appear to the appeal to the council or appear before the council, and that's when we'll get Yoda talking to them. If I had to put money on it, I think that's what they're going to do.
I think that would be pretty likely. I think that's like, if we do see it, I think it's likely that it's a scene like that. I was thinking that maybe, like you said, like maybe we'll get. He doesn't even physically need to be there. It could be a hollow or something. Like if he's on some other world or planet, or, I mean, you never know, I guess.
I think that the Jedi also have a tendency to keep things hush hush when it's a little bit what's the word? Ambiguous, like morally ambiguous. So Venestra very clearly states, like, you know, if it ever was to get out that one of our own or someone who's trained in the blah blah, you know. So I think if there is anything to do that, and that's not saying everybody dies by the end of the show, though that would be quite interesting. I do think there's a tendency to want to quell things and not alert anyone and not raise, you know, be like, oh, don't worry, it's a dark side user. No. Can't be. Let's pretend this didn't happen. I think that happens a lot. And there's obviously something also that happened on the Mae and Osha's home planet of forgetting the name of the home planet, but starts with a B. That's all I know. But whatever happened there, if the Jedi would want to keep hush hush, and it seems like they're really trying to, you know, keep this insular and not make it such a massive thing. I also think that at this point, the Jedi number in like the thousands, right? Like, this is a very big order, and so there are lots of things going on constantly. And so, you know, not everyone can be a part of it. And Yoda won't necessarily be a part of every single thing that happens. And there are going to be other masters and who aren't on the council who are also taking charge of things. So I think it'll be a very small cameo, if anything. My large to sum that up, if anything. But I do think it will happen. I don't think everyone knows that he's alive at this point. So I feel like it's just a matter of wanting to make sure it doesn't take away from the story and the characters that they're creating for this.
So what is your stance on, and I hate to kind of, and I don't mean to turn this into a...
go for it.
But what is your stance on puppet Yoda versus CGI Yoda?
Oh, you know, I was just thinking that like 2 minutes ago. I was like, in my head, do I bring up and ask if they're going to do puppet or if they're going to do CGI? Oh,
well, so man. I would hope that they do the CG.
I actually didn't think I'd lean with you. Yeah.
Of course we grew up with the CG. That was what I saw in the movies.
Same. And I think it fits in with the prequel feel, because that's what they're going for. This is before the prequels, obviously. But I think this show has so much love for the prequels. I think CG Yoda. As much as I love both, it just does feel like two. It feels, you know, it's like the same character completely, and it feels both versions, the prequel versions in CG and the, both the original and when he shows up in the sequel trilogy in The Last Jedi are all puppet. And I feel like it feels very separated. So if I see anything from, I feel like it should just be CG. If it's pre A New Hope, I feel like it should just be CG. I feel like a puppet might actually take away from it, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Which is odd, because I am usually a big fan of practical. I like CG also. I think it's just a matter of using it well. And honestly, I'm not one of those people, practical should always. I do very much appreciate practical, but I do think there is very much a real. And Leslie Headlam with this show was sure to make it that, okay, we want real sets. I'm not shooting in the volume. We're not shooting all that. Like, real sets, real locations, real things. And so there is that lived-in quality for Star Wars that's so nice, and it feels real, which is great. But there is also a prequel sheen to it. And I think that going in the puppet route would kind of just take away from that. I think it would actually stand out and would actually maybe have more of a negative response. It would take you out of it a little bit, I would think.
Yeah. I think it would have that. It would have that effect. I definitely think it would have that effect on me. I'd be like, okay, so. So I don't know. It would just be a weird adjustment, probably for me. And I know I'm sure CG Yoda is probably an adjustment for other fans, but. For me, this would definitely be an adjustment. I did think it probably fit more for The Last Jedi because of, you know, Luke. And
yeah.
We've never seen Luke talk to CG Yoda. At least, you know, not that we know of. But,
yeah.
But I think having the CG version for this would, I don't know. I think it would fit better. Personally,
I think I'm 100% with you. I really, and I didn't in my head when I first considered this, I hadn't cited, but I didn't think I'd feel so strongly, but I actually feel pretty strongly. I think a CG Yoda would work better. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Oh, I love that we were on the same page with that, like wondering whether or not that would, you know, puppet or CG. All right, so they form a small little group. They're said, okay, go look into this, go get her, find out what happened to the crash ship on Karlak. So this group is Master Sol. Like I said, new favorite. It's also his apprentice, Jeki Lon, who already, I think Daphne Keane is playing this character and is, again, a standout already. There's just, one of the things I have, I think, with the characters is it doesn't feel like, and maybe this is because I was, after Ahsoka, seeing them try to fill in these shoes of characters that were already portrayed in you know, Rebels and whatnot, it felt very much like, oh, I'm trying to fill in these shoes, and it, you almost have to, for us, reconcile in the head, like, these two versions of the characters, whereas with this, it's like these actors are just diving straight in and making it their own, and it's 100% believable it in every way. And I think they're just such great characters. I think Jackie's got a little bit of sass. I think it was great when she walks onto the ship and Yord's, like, steaming his robe, and he's got his top is off, and she's just like, Yord, put on some clothing. and it's such a perfectly delivered line that just really, it feels authentic in its banter, you know?
It does.
It doesn't, it feels like good writing. And I like I said, I've had some problems with the writing and feeling stiff in some of the Star Wars shows, and this just isn't the case here. So yeah, all three of them, where Sol tells Jackie and Yord about the fact that Osha has a twin sister, May, who supposedly died in this fire, that she, May, herself started in, the fact that I'm just not going to be able to, what happened on Brandok? That is the name of the planet, by the way. Brandok is where May and Osha are from. Whatever happened on Brandok, which is, again, fascinating, is I want to know what the heck happened that these four Jedi are on a hit list. But yeah, they go to find the crashed ship. They find that Osha, she escaped the crashed ship. She kind of has a vision of her sister. The Jedi catch up with her. And in a scene that very much mirrors Clone Wars Season 5, Sol approaches Osha, who's on the edge of the ledge, and Osha's like, I didn't do it. It's not me. May is alive. I didn't do it. And Sol believes her. And then obviously catches her also when she's about to fall. I don't know about you. Did you see the parallel between this and the wronged Jedi? Do you remember when Ahsoka is they're going through the sewer system and Ahsoka jumps off to go to the underworld of Coruscant, and Anakin's like, don't go. And it's like holding out his hand to her, and she's like, you have to believe me. It wasn't me. And I have to go sort this. It was like a direct parallel. I thought it was.
Yes.
Yeah. If you get a chance, go back. Just watch that scene. You know, after the show, I will send you that scene on YouTube. And you'll be like, it's literally like camera shot, the way they're standing, almost a perfect parallel.
Yeah. Yeah. That. I would have to watch that again.
Well, it's all right. I will provide you with your homework. You got it. No worries. Sol doesn't let her fall. Not that we ever thought that was going to happen. And that is the end of the episode. Almost. But right before the end, we're watching May return to her master, who is looking very menacing on a bunch of rocks, who's giving this little speech. Who says, you know, in his modulated voice, we don't get a good look at his mask. We just see his silhouette in the far end as he ignites a lightsaber. And with his modulated voice says that the weapons do not work against the Jedi. It does not matter. No knives, no swords. Nothing will work against the Jedi. But an acolyte. An acolyte will make them, will destroy them. An acolyte will take them down. An acolyte will make them think. And says... Oh, I forget what does he say? I forgot exactly what he said, but I thought it was really interesting. This mention of the acolyte. What did you feel like? I actually felt I was a little mixed on this first scene that we get with this master, quote unquote. Where were you at with our masked man?
Yeah, I'm very un. This is one of the things I'm very unsure about in terms of where, who is this? What is their connection to the Sith that we know of, if there is any connection? And what then in turn is May's connection to this whole thing as well, if there is a connection with May. So it's just a lot of questions. I would hope that there is some kind of Plagueis connection or lineage of some kind. Yeah. You know, that's just my hope. That's just what I am hoping that we get. I'm not getting my hopes up, you know. Again, I'm trying not to have this be another, like, Snoke situation of just, oh, who is this? Is this a new? And then just let down in terms of, like, the reveal of who it actually is. So I am, again, just very undecided. I wouldn't even say I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm just cautious.
Undecided. Yeah, I'm with you as well. The first time I heard the little speech she gives at the end of the episode, I was not sold on it at all. There was something about it that I thought felt very stiff. And that might just been the way it was presented, the way that, like, it's like a weird voiceover. We don't really know if he's actually talking because it was, it's weird. It's a little, I thought it was a little weird. It was like the one part of the episode that I thought didn't land so well for me. And I feel like it's something you actually do want to land well. You know, that first glimpse at the villain. I'm with you in that I hope there is some kind of Plagueis connection at this point. I'm fuzzy on, because you read Plagueis, I have not. And you know a lot more than I do. I'm fuzzy on the timeline and the years in terms of, like, where this places Plagueis, how old he is. Maybe you can shed some light, or I can do some research afterward. But I think there will be a Plagueis connection, because I think that they know enough to know that Plagueis is going to be involved at this point somehow. Whether May is the real acolyte too, who is the acolyte? I know we're all thinking May, but I also think maybe that's a double meaning. Also, by the way, the fact that each episode has had two titles, not just one. So, you know, Lost, Found, Revenge, Justice. I think the acolyte may not be May. It could be the Masked Man. That could be Plague is kind of sending someone out, like starting to test the foundations of the Jedi. Starting to, you know, also it's interesting because... you know more about this, what is going on with any kind of dark side or Sith at this point? We know that the opening crawl of the show for this episode was that, a group of users have been practicing, right? Like, the Force. And what does that mean? Like, I don't know what that means. And I think we're going to get all of these answers and more, by the way. I do think it's not going to be one of those situations where they don't answer it. I actually think we're going to get all the answers that we want. If anything, I think we're going to get more than we think. These first two episodes move at breakneck speed. For 35 minutes each, there's so much crammed into each of these episodes. It did not feel like there was really any down moments where I was like, oh, if they could speed it along or if they could hurry it up or it doesn't feel like they're padding anything out. Like, there is an obvious, like, structure to it. So I'm very impressed there. But yeah, I wasn't sold on our masked man at the end here, but that is okay.
So Plagueis was a Sith during the events of the Darth Plagueis novel.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where that would place him now, I would have to look up the exact, the exact years. I'm just doing a Wikipedia.
I'm doing my thing as well.
So apparently the lifespan of Immune is over 100 years old. So I guess it's possible that there's some kind of connection to Plagueis. But it seems like that's about as clear as it gets. But in the Plagueis novel, there is definitely Plagueis is a Sith. Going into the time when Palpatine is a child, which pre-Phantom Menace would be I mean, decades. I mean, he could be around. It's possible.
Does Plague is, like, outright vow to demolish the rule of two? Does he say that?
To demolish the rule of two?
Yeah. Does he subscribe to the notion of the rule of two? Just yes. Curious. Yes, he does. Okay.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. So he never has. He is very much subscribed to the rule of two.
So I'm on our best friend Reddit because Reddit has all the answers, right? I'm looking at it. It says Plagueis was killed at the start of the Phantom Menace or during the Phantom Menace, it seems, like roughly around. Is that right also?
Yes. I still want you to read it just to see the context of what happens, but yes.
Oh, yeah, I do want to also.
It's very cool because you're going through it and you're like, oh my god, Plagueis is around when this is happening? And he is. He is around a lot of the events of the beginning of the...
So it says the bulk of the story takes place 33 or so years leading up to the Phantom Menace.
Right.
Which definitely means he was, if he's 100-something, you know, Munt can live quite long. He's definitely around at this point. It's just a matter of how much will he be involved in whatever is going on. Again, I think there will be a little bit of connection. We're going to get... It may not even be that he is necessarily behind everything, but I do think in one way or another it will be connected to Plagueis. I would be incredibly surprised if they didn't include him somehow and just show like this is how it's leading up to the return of the Sith. I'd be very, very surprised. But we also still have the mothers to deal with. Mother Anaseya. And that whole, you know, cult to deal with.
Wait, who is that? Mother Anaseya.
So, Mother Anaseya is the leader of a mysterious coven of witches on Brandok, who value their independence and the preservation of their beliefs and powers. And she's knowledgeable in the arcane ways of the Force.
I see. Right, yeah.
So I think somehow this is going to tie in also. I think there's still so much that we're not... We have to figure out everything that happened to Brandok. We still have this cult and whatever's going on. If right. Plagueis is involved and whatnot, capturing... But, you know, she still has two other Jedi to go for. That's Kelnaka and Sol. Even though they fight in episode two, those are the two other Jedi on the hit list. So, like, there's actually 6 half-hour episodes left, and there's actually still a lot to happen. And a lot we haven't seen yet. So, that's really cool, actually, by the way. That makes me really happy. We are getting ahead of ourselves. So, like, we haven't even gotten into the start of episode two. But we are already theorizing, which I think is great, which is the wonderful thing about this show and about Star Wars in general, and talking to you, is theorizing. All right. Do you want to give me your thoughts on episode one as a whole, or do you think we should get into episode two, and then we can talk about our thoughts? Because it was a package deal when we first started this episode.
Yeah, we could probably get into episode two. I definitely looked at it more as like a combined
Yeah. I did too. I would say it does also, by the way, I am looking forward to kind of binging the whole series because it feels like the way everything moves, it's kind of like one big movie. Like it just kind of the way everything goes, it's fantastic. Right, episode two pretty much takes place on Olega. So Mei, after meeting with her masters and killing Master Andara, is on her way to Olega to take care of another Jedi, Master Torbin, who has taken the Barash vow. Did you catch that?
Yes, I did, and I love that. I love that detail.
Was that not? Oh, I got so excited. I turned my friend and went, "The Barash vow," and he goes, "What?" And I go, "Oh, yeah, that's right." I'm getting sidetracked again, but from the first shown in the Blade miniseries, from Charles Soule as part of phase two of the High Republic initiative is it's a vow that based off Barash Siglain, who Barash Sylvain, is that it? Barash Sylvain, I can't remember. But she takes after a vow of silence after they feel like they've done something incredibly wrong. So Torben is taking this vow of silence after and meditation after whatever happened on Brandok. And the four Jedi, as we start to unpeel some of this story a bit and this mystery, the four Jedi were involved in something on Brandok involving Osha and Mei and this fire that killed Osha's family and all of this. And Mei is on a revenge mission. And so her second task is to get Torben, but she can't because Torben's in this meditation. The force is like surrounding him. And nobody can. It's impenetrable. So she actually goes to Chimere, who is played by, I'm forgetting his name, but he's from The Good Place. You ever watched The Good Place?
I can't say I've seen that.
All right. Well, you're missing out. Another good show, but played by Manny Jacinto, who also knows exactly what Mei's mission is and also seems to know the master and whoever that is. But who gives her some poison, who she then presents to Torben as a way to repent for his sins. And whatever they did that was so bad, he takes the poison and kills himself. Like, I feel like whatever they're leading up to, so the mystery of who the Acolyte is, quote unquote, we know it's Mei, we know she's doing these murders. I'm glad that we've kind of gotten that out of the way. The why is almost always more interesting and more important. And the fact that what happened 16 years ago that these four Jedi are absolutely scarred? What is it? What went wrong? What did they do? I am incredibly enthralled by the mystery of that.
Oh, same. Yeah, I am so, like, I'm very invested in the story. It's being told really well. Again, shocking that you'd see a Jedi commit suicide. Like, never. And even when I saw that, I was like, boy, how do I feel about that? I almost had to, like, sit and think. I was like, boy, is Jedi just, like, committed suicide? Like, seemingly out of some kind of guilt. It's like, how do I feel about that? It's like, that's like, again, like you said, it makes me just wonder what happened. Like, how, like, what occurred that was, like, what did they do? And why, if it was that bad, why did they do it? Like, just so many questions. So,
we've never seen that before. I can't remember ever seeing a Jedi essentially taking their own life.
No. Yeah.
I've never seen that. And so for it to be this bad, we don't know what Kel Naka is up to. Kel Naka seems to be big hermit on Kofar, big hermit vibes. But that's the Wookiee Jedi. Whatever has happened is absolutely traumatizing and scarring, and they don't want anyone to know either. So they're telling it so well, and they're really building up this mystery really, really well. So Soul and Osha and Yord and Jackie travel to Olega to find out what's happening because it's been reported. Torben's then been attacked, and they come. I'm kind of going through this episode a little bit faster because I think it moves a bit quicker and it's very condensed, and we find out a little bit more story details. But it ends with a big confrontation. Osha did not know Mei was alive in all of their in all these years, obviously until now. Mei did not know Osha was alive, so somebody was keeping that from her as well. Ends with a big confrontation. Again, we get a fantastically choreographed fight scene as Master Soule comes face to face with Mei, tries to appeal to her, tries to plead to figure out what happened, what's going on, to figure out who is leading her down this path, but can't find anything. And she, you know, Mei doesn't even know the identity of her master. It's I that That fight scene, man, another fantastic fight scene. This little like martial arts influence on these fights is incredible. Like, it's just so, it's so real and raw, and it's so captivating.
Yeah, it's, the fight choreography has been excellent.
It's so incredible.
It's been really, really good. So good. And it's interesting because it makes sense within the universe, right? I mean, the Jedi, they're not out here just, they're not like just hacking and slashing away at people.
No, they're trained fighters.
They're trained fighters. They know how to fight, and they want to try to resolve things without having to stab someone or cut someone. You know, like they, so it makes sense that they would not pull their lightsaber out. Similar to what Indara said, I believe, in the beginning of the show, which is like, or maybe Mei said it to her, but she's like, you know, you only pull the lightsaber out when you are, intend to use it. So they're not, they tend to be nonviolent. So the nonviolent route would be hand-to-hand combat or using the Force, or both.
Yeah. And or like both, that combination of the hand-to-hand combat with the Force, like helping, blocking, flipping, moving things, pushing away, but not taking out the lightsaber and trying to strike down. And it's it really just lives, it's just a great demonstration of the Jedi code. Just this, I'm not going to strike down people who are, defenseless or without a weapon, though we know that's Mei has said, no, yes, you do, so don't give me that. Did you notice in both fight scenes, both against Master Indara and against Master Sol, she tries reaching for their lightsaber?
I noticed in the Sol fight, I didn't notice in the other.
So in the Indara fight also, upon second watch, in both times, she's flipped around, and there's a part where you can see her, and the camera obviously focuses on it, so I think it's definitely purposeful. She tries to grab the lightsaber. She doesn't get Indara's. She tries to grab Sol's lightsaber also when she's flipped, and doesn't get Sol's as well. So I think there's, I don't know what it is, I'm not going to speculate too hard on that one, but I do think that was purposeful.
Oh.
Yeah. She makes her escape. She gets on a speeder, she's about to go away, comes face to face with Mei, who tries to stun her, I mean, face to face with Osha, who tries to stun her sister Mei, isn't able to, they have a moment there, and then she gets away. I think as we're talking about the fact that I just said Mei and Osha and they come face to face, I think we should, I want to 1000% give props to Amandla Stenberg, who's absolutely playing the heck out of both these characters and bring so much, like, they both feel so very different. They feel like they're twins with very different personalities on very different journeys, but played fantastically by her. I just think it's honestly very believable too. So I just wanted to shout out the props. Acting all around, all of these actors have been fantastic, I think. So just wanted to shout that out.
Oh yeah, yeah. She's done a great job so far, and she's playing two roles basically. And I think she's been doing a fantastic job so far. Like,
yeah.
I have nothing but good things to say. I haven't seen her in anything else, I don't think, but she's really impressing me.
Have you seen? Well, she was in the Hunger Games. As Rue.
Okay.
Yeah. She also. You ever see The Hate U Give? In 2017, it's based off the book.
No.
Really good film, and she's really good in it, so I 100 would recommend that for you and for anyone else who is listening. A fantastic film. But yeah, Amandla Stenberg, absolutely incredible. We get away, the Jedi are recovering, figuring out what to do next. Sol's like, Vernestra, we know where she's going. She's going to get after Kel Naka. We know what she's doing. We know the Jedi she's after. Let us go after her. And Vernestra's like, no, we have to have intense conversations and discussions about this. You can't just go out there, you know, just and do what you want and just go without thinking, without talking about it. You need to come back to Coruscant. We need to talk about it. So that's a bit of the red tape that Sol's being caught up in. And then we also flash to Kofar, the jungle planet of Kofar, where Kel Naka is giving off big Shrek vibes. Get off my swamp. vibes, which I really, appreciated as he, you know, as two looks like scavengers come to kind of raid Kelnaka's hideout. And then he grabs one of the guns from them using the force, breaks it, and scares them off without drawing his lightsaber again. And yeah, and then it cuts. And that's the end of episode two. And now we're left waiting for another 4 days, which is agonizing.
Yeah, it's a tough wait, for sure.
Did I miss anything?
No, well, I would also just comment on just the, I guess, the crash landing scene in the first episode.
Yes, take me back.
With those, I guess, criminals. I thought that was a nice scene, a nice touch, seeing some of those aliens and some of those things that I just, again, just expanding the universe. I had never seen whatever that alien was that, like, extended its, I don't know if you call it a snout or whatever that was, that grabbed the robot's neck and then was, like, choking it through the cage and stuff. That was something to see. It was like, okay, so we're getting another alien. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure we'll have a name for it soon enough, if we don't already. And then the guy that had that whatever on his face, that thing on his face that was, like, I guess sending him, it was like almost giving off like some kind of drug, I guess, to put him in. They were saying, oh, he's fine, but she's like, oh, should we check on him? He had some kind of creature on his face, like, oh, he's fine. That's like, oh wow, okay. And then also, yeah, the crash landing scene was seen, it was crazy. And then also, I like her little droid. What she calls it, Pip.
Pip, yeah, a little Pip droid. Like,
boy, they keep making these droids just smaller and cuter and cuter and smaller.
I don't know. Star Wars just never goes wrong, and I don't know how they do it. But I love this little Pip. Star Wars quotes: a handheld repair droid with a wide array of tool attachments has a chipper, can-do personality. Always eager to help, often suggesting just the right tool for the task at hand. I want a little Pip droid.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know how they do it, but every time they introduce the Lola droid that Leia has in Obi-Wan, the D8 droid that J.J. Abrams voices in The Rise of Skywalker, BB-8, all of them, just like these tiny droids they keep introducing are absolutely just, some of the best stuff.
Absolutely.
Some of the best stuff.
Yeah, no, I think other than that, I think we pretty much covered everything.
Where are you in terms of let's we've already theorized quite a bit throughout the episode in terms of Plagueis connection, things like that. Where are you with the show right now? As somebody who was cautiously optimistic going in, pretty optimistic when it starts, how are you feeling about the show's trajectory now?
I'm very pleased with this trajectory. I'm mostly confident, and by mostly, I'd say probably, I'd give it maybe like 80 to 85% confident. I will enjoy the show as a whole. I think I like the direction. I like the characters. I like that we're getting so many Jedi. I like that it's a Jedi-centered story and that they're not shying away from that. Like, this is a Jedi Force-centered story. You know, showing the end of the High Republic era, you know, and I think it's just everything that they've shown so far I've been pleased with. Again, the only thing that gives me any trepidation is this master. I'm just okay, because we know the show is called The Acolyte, and we know that's the center, it's kind of the main, you know, kind of point of the show is, okay, who is the Acolyte? Okay, is it Mei? Who is she the Acolyte of? Is she a Sith acolyte? We're gonna hear the word Sith, you know, throughout this, you know, just where this story goes in terms of building the lore of the Sith and of what we see in throughout the prequels and then the originals and then the sequels and on. I still want to see where that goes. So that's the only thing I think that I am still trepidatious about, and I'd say it isn't minor, because it's definitely, I think it either is or it should be probably a central point of the show. But I am very much enjoying it so far, and I'm loving everything. Everything they've shown with the Jedi has been, I think, has been top notch, and all the action and the acting and everything has been great. So I'd say I'm still cautiously optimistic, but I'm more optimistic probably than I was before.
I am 1,000% with you. I think I'm totally on board with the entire show completely. Feels most like Star Wars, and the most like the prequels at the very least, that I have felt. I feel like it. I've completely settled into it, whereas with other shows, with the exception of Andor, I feel like I've always felt a little bit like, oh, how is this? Some things are sitting right with me, some things aren't, and in terms of the feel. 1,000% feels like Star Wars. Feels like a chapter of the prequels. It feels true to Star Wars. The acting's great. The writing's great. The mystery is great. Like you, I'm just not sold on the villain yet. But again, we've had one look from afar and one speech. So I think that I am very, very optimistic in that the show is going to fulfill on its promise completely. Apparently, the third episode is where what really is going to hook most people. And that was the word coming out of the 4-episode premiere at the premiere. So I think it's only going to get bigger and crazier and more intense from here. And I think it's a shame that I can't binge it. I'm really happy we're on a weekly schedule, because that's what I tend to favor is a weekly release schedule to keep up with things, and I think it's great for generating conversation and buzz. But I also want to just get more of it already, because more Star Wars, more High Republic. I live for this, so I'm excited. All right, before I wrap up, anything else? Back of the Acolyte.
Nothing else really from me.
All right.
Yeah, nothing else really from me, you know.
All right.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, we, for those of you who've been listening, thank you for sticking with us for a solid, like, hour and a half. I knew this would be a longer one. And we didn't even get into everything we could have talked about, because Shamari and I are I think it's safe to say that, like, when we want to get into the nitty-gritty, we could get into the nitty-gritty, and we can go on for hours. But this was our impressions of the first two episodes of The Acolyte. Both of us are 100%, I would say, on the recommend train. I recommend it highly. Go watch it if you haven't. If you've stuck around this point, you haven't watched it, I'm so sorry for all the spoilers, but you knew what you were getting into. Go watch it. Go catch up. I'm excited for Wednesday. I would love to do a weekly show, if I'm being honest. Probably won't happen. But definitely we'll be back for a review at the end of the season. I am committing ourselves to that. Shamari, I'm committing you to this. I'm committing myself to this.
All right.
We can review at the end of the season. Also, more than welcome if you wanna have me on your show at any point. If you guys are going to talk The Acolyte, I'm here for it. If you guys decide to chat on it at all, I'm clearing up my schedule to talk more Star Wars. I mean, we've got Temptation of the Force coming out in a couple days. I was able to get an early copy for a bit, which was awesome. Yeah, it's like we say pretty much every episode, it's a really good time to be a Star Wars fan. A great time to jump on for new things and to be a new Star Wars fan and just throw yourself into this universe. I've got friends left and right who are really starting to get into it, and it's really nice. And it's nice to see the buzz and the positivity that's coming from all of this new content. And I think we're in an era of there's always going to be toxicity, and I don't want to focus on that. Because I really just want to promote positivity. But I will say that from what I'm seeing in the circles I'm in, it's been a wealth of positivity. It has been wonderful open arms to people who are just coming in for the first time, to people who don't watch Star Wars too much or who do, and it's just who have been really accepting. And I love seeing that. And that's what I'm going to continue to surround myself with. And that's what I think everyone should surround yourself with. If you don't like something, that's more than okay. There are things that I have not loved about Star Wars over the past few years in terms of releases, and we're all allowed that. But I also think it's important to remember the joy. And to just surround yourself with good things. Sir, this is the only place I can be found, but where can people find you? Because you are available outside of this show.
Yes, by all means. So please, check out my, as Zach had mentioned earlier, I do have another, podcast that I do, or a couple other podcasts that I do. If you look up the New Generation Podcast Network, that's NU Generation Podcast Network. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can check us out. I have a Star Wars podcast there called The Imperial Broadcast that Zach has appeared on as well, and we will continue to bring him back on as we can. Please. And we have a superhero podcast there as well if you're into comic books or superheroes, and a sports podcast. So check all that stuff out. It's pretty good. So please check it out.
Say it's more than pretty good. They know their stuff, and they're a ton of fun to listen to and have a good time just chilling out with them. And hopefully I'm on soon. We can talk some Star Wars or superheroes or anything. I'm down for everything.
Awesome.
That has been our first impression of the Acolyte. Like I said, we've got, it drops every Wednesday or Tuesday night. Wednesday, new episodes. It's an 8-episode season, so we got 6 more weeks of this. Temptation of the Force coming out. The High Republic comic series that Adventure is continuously releasing. There's a ton of Star Wars at all times. So much to dive into. A wealth of books to go back to if you haven't. Old legend stories that are worth it, even if I haven't read them, like Plagueis, which I'm not going to make promises, but I'm sure going to try to get to. So this has been Geeking Out over Star Wars. We appreciate you taking out time from your day to listen to us and to geek out with us. And we will be back at some point. I'm not going to make any promises this time, but we'll be back at some point. Thank you for listening, and may the Force be with you.